Passing out was one thing. Passing out next to a monster was something else entirely. If there was one time in his life when Frank Morgan truly didn't expect to wake up again, this was it. But he had to be alive. Not even hell could smell this bad. Funny thing, though, he saw a flickering red glow against his closed eyelids and felt the heat of flames. Maybe he was dead after all. The smell got worse. Something slid under Frank's head and lifted it. He felt water splash against his parched lips and sucked at it greedily. Gradually, he was able to pry his eyes open. He was looking up into the face of the terror as the creature leaned curiously over him. Or rather, it was the face of Ben Chamberlain, because Frank could see something human in the eyes now, some flicker of intelligence that hadn't been there before. The sight of the locket, with his own picture and that of his sister inside it, must have somehow shocked Ben back to his senses, part of the way at least. Ben had made a cup out of some sort of large fern-like leaf, and it was from this that he dribbled water into Frank's mouth.
Thank you. Thank you for your help.
Nancy?
She's at home.
Home.
Frank glanced around. He saw that Ben had started a fire somehow. Only a small blaze, but it filled the cave with welcome light and heat. He didn't see Wolf, though. The big cur had been lying near the wall, evidently unconscious, the last glimpse Frank had gotten of him. Ben reached over, out of Frank's line of sight, and brought back a blood-dripping haunch of raw meat that looked like it had been torn directly off a carcass.
Eat!
Frank saw the coarse gray hair clinging to the flesh, and his stomach revolted.
Wolf!
He fought his way into a sitting position. Filled with rage of his own, not caring how Ben reacted, he slapped the giant's hand aside.
You son of a...
Frank's head jerked toward the cave opening. He saw Wolf standing there, a quizzical look on his face.
Wolf!
Wolf came tentatively into the cave, all the way to Frank's side. He started licking Frank's face. Ben leaned back against the rocky wall and watched the reunion. Frank couldn't be sure because of the thick beard, but he thought Ben was smiling. Frank put his arms around Wolf's neck and hugged the big cur for a long moment. Frank was still chilled, but the warmth from the fire helped. So did having Wolf pressed against him. The trembling inside him eased. As it did, he became aware of how thirsty he still was. He pointed to the leaf in Ben's hand.
Water.
Ben seemed to understand. He got to his feet and shuffled to the cave mouth. Stretching out his arm, he held the cupped leaf in the drizzle until it was mostly full of water. Then he carried it back carefully to Frank and offered it to him. Frank took it, being equally careful not to spill the liquid, and drank deeply from it. He had to have something to eat, too. Ben had laid that haunch on the cave floor. Frank didn't know what sort of animal it was from and wasn't about to ask. He picked it up, brushed the dirt off it, and drew his knife. He used the blade to carve off a hunk of meat with no hide attached, then speared it on the knife and leaned forward to hold it over the flames. Ben watched him, apparently fascinated. The smell of roasting meat soon filled the cave. When it was cooked enough, Frank took it out of the fire and blew on it, waiting for it to cool. After a few minutes, he tore off a piece and held it out toward Ben. The giant hesitated, then reached out and started to take it. He pulled his fingers back when he felt that the meat was still warm. Clearly, he wasn't used to that anymore.
It's all right. Go ahead. Take it.
To demonstrate, Frank bit a piece off the meat still stuck on the knife and started to chew. It was pretty gamey, but the juices gave him a jolt of strength anyway. He ate the whole piece, while Ben worked up the courage to take the morsel Frank was offering him and sample it. When he finally did, though, he seemed to like it. Frank roasted more of the meat, which he thought might be Wolf. This time, Ben was eager to share. As they were gnawing on the meat, Frank tried something.
You remember Jules Verne, Ben?
Jules Verne? Nemo.
That's right. Captain Nemo, from 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. I saw that book. It belonged to you, didn't it?
My book.
I like to read, too. I've read that one in 5 weeks in a...
No!
Take it easy, Ben. We won't talk about it anymore. Just settle down.
No!
Ben didn't settle down. He lunged to his feet and ran out into the night before Frank could stop him. Frank climbed painfully to his feet, limped over to the cave mouth, and looked out into the thick, wet darkness. He would never find Ben out there. He was certain now that the terror was really Ben Chamberlain. There were still mysteries to be solved, though, such as what had happened to make Ben like he was now. Something had happened. Something had driven him over the edge of sanity into madness. Yes, there was still plenty of truth to uncover, and Frank was bound and determined to uncover it. He sat down and leaned back against the wall with Wolf close beside him to wait for morning. After a while, his eyes closed and he slept. The drizzle had become an actual rain by the time Jack Grimshaw and his companions rode back into Eureka that evening. They had split up just outside of the settlement as usual. Grimshaw said they would meet in the back room of the Bull o' the Woods later. He headed for the Eureka house. He knew that Emmett Bosworth would want a report. A chill that had nothing to do with being soaked went down Grimshaw's back as he paused in front of the door to Bosworth's suite and rapped on the panel. Bosworth jerked open the door a couple of seconds later. He wore a dressing gown, and one hand clutched a squat glass with a couple of fingers of whiskey in it.
Did you find Morgan?
I don't cotton to standing in the hall.
Fine. Well?
We found him. But he's not dead.
Why the hell not?
Because we found something else at the same time. We ran into the terror.
Really? The damn thing actually exists?
I got three more dead men to prove it.
But did you actually see?
The thing was standing close to me as you are now. Big as life, twice as ugly, and smelled 10 times as bad.
Given its history, then, I say you were lucky to be alive, Grimshaw.
Yeah, damned lucky.
I wish you'd been able to kill Morgan, though. Tell me what happened.
Grimshaw spent the next 5 minutes doing that. When Grimshaw was finished, Bosworth finished his drink and glared at him.
You'll be going back out in the morning to resume the search for Morgan, I take it.
We don't know that he's still out there.
He was on foot and possibly wounded. Do you really think he got away?
I wouldn't put anything past Frank Morgan. He's done things you wouldn't think any man could do. And he's got more lives than a cat.
He's human like anyone else. You put enough bullets in him and he'll die.
Yeah, but how many else will he kill first?
That's not my worry. I'm paying you to take care of that. Now you keep losing men anyway. Do you need to recruit more men?
There's still 11 of us. 11 good men. That's enough.
I would hope so. But 15 doesn't seem to have been enough, at least so far.
Morgan will be dead before the end of the day tomorrow.
That's what I want to hear. Now just be sure you make good on it this time, Grimshaw. Otherwise, I'm going to start thinking you can't handle what I need you to handle.
Don't worry. Morgan is as good as dead.
Erickson and the other 4 men sat around the table in the Bull o' the Woods, each of them as sullen and somber as they drank their whiskey.
I'm done.
What do you mean you're done?
Just what I said. Done. Finished. I'm not going back out there, Erickson. Not to fell timber, not to look for Sutherland, and damn sure not to hunt monsters or gunfighters. If you want to go after Frank Morgan and the Terror, that's your business. But count me out.
You're throwing away a big payoff. When Chamberlain ups the bounty to 20 grand tomorrow, that'll be 4,000 apiece when we bring in the Terror's head.
Yeah, or else I'll wind up with my bones scattered over some godforsaken hillside like Sutherland.
We don't know the Terror killed him. He might have gotten away.
I'm with Jenkins. I'm through monster hunting.
Now, damn it, you can't both back out on me.
Looks like we just have.
What about you two? Are you gonna turn tail and run too?
I'll stick. You know that.
Yeah. We've been riding together for a while, Erickson. We're still with you.
Good. I was afraid you two might have turned yellow, too.
Forget it, Erickson. It won't work. Royston and me, we're loggers, not gunmen. Not hard cases like the three of you. Neither was Sutherland. We just let greed blind us, that's all. We thought we could throw in with you and be something we're not. We know better now.
Good riddance, then. I don't ride with anybody I can't trust.
So long, then.
Well, Back to a three-way split, and we didn't have to kill those bastards to get there.
Yeah, we're better off without him.
We're still going after Morgan?
I don't know. I haven't seen him around town tonight. He may still be out there somewhere in the woods. Hell, maybe the terror even got him.
That'd make things simpler for us, wouldn't it? It
sure would.
We can't do anything about any of it tonight. So I'm gonna go find me a gal and not even think about monsters and gunfighters for a while. I'd advise you boys to do the same.
Sounds good to me. I've had enough hooch to deaden the pain in this wounded arm of mine. Maybe I'll go deaden something else.
That don't even make sense. But I must really be drunk, because it's funny anyway.
Grimshaw had gone through the usual charade with Harry the bartender, got the key to the back room, and sat at the table nursing a drink as the other 10 men filtered into the room by ones and twos. When everyone was there, Grimshaw addressed his men.
We're going out again in the morning to look for Morgan.
Bosworth still wants him dead?
Why wouldn't he? What's changed since this afternoon?
Well, we lost Hargan, Flynn, and Dupree.
Why in the hell would Bosworth care about that? We're just tools to him. Just like an axe or a saw to a logger.
Well, by God, I think he needs to pay us more. This is turning into a dangerous job.
Yeah, imagine that. Being a hired gun is dangerous work.
You know what I mean. It ain't enough we gotta go after Morgan. We have to worry about that damn monster, too. What if it's on the lookout for us now? We don't know how smart the blasted critter really is. People seem to think it's only attacked folks who happen to run into it. But what if it's really out there looking for unlucky hombres to rip apart?
I can't believe none of us hit it. The way we were throwing lead around out there. Hell, it looked to me like we put a half dozen bullet holes in it, at least. But the thing never slowed down, never acted like it was hurt.
Maybe someone was watching over it, like a guardian angel.
More like a guardian devil, since it looked to me like it crawled up right out of hell.
That's right. You got the best look of it out of anybody still alive, Grimshaw. What'd it look like?
Like nothing you ever saw before. Like nothing anybody ever saw before.
Sounds to me like you're saying the terror is even uglier than old Hooley here, Jack.
Hey, how'd you like it if I went around comparing you to a monster?
Forget it. Everybody have a drink, then go get a whore. Better yet, get a good night's sleep. You're liable to need it come morning.
How we gonna find Morgan?
I'm not sure we'll have to worry about that. Chances are, Morgan's gonna find us.
Bosworth was pacing, smoking, and drinking when he heard the knock on the sitting room door. He smiled as he went to the door. The lamps in the hallway had been turned down low, so the light was dim. It was enough, though, to show him the slender figure who stood there, wearing a hooded cape to keep the rain off her hair. As Bosworth closed the door behind her, she lowered the hood so that the lamplight in the room reflected off her thick, shiny, auburn hair. She shrugged out of the cape. Bosworth took it from her, hung it on a brass hook near the door. She wore a plain dress tonight, not the sort of gaudy thing she sometimes slipped into when she was visiting him. Knowing they wouldn't have to worry about any interruptions from her husband due to the opium habit he traditionally indulged in after dinner, Bosworth pulled her toward him, brought his mouth down hard on hers. She wrapped her arms around his neck and pressed her body to his. By morning, Frank's fever had broken. The rugged life he'd led, plus his own naturally hardy constitution, gave him the ability to throw off illness fairly quickly. His left arm was mighty stiff and sore, though. Ben Chamberlain hadn't come back to the cave during the night, at least not that Frank was aware of. When Frank walked out into the morning sun, he saw Stormy and Goldie not far away, cropping at the grass. His signal brought them both trotting toward him. He had jerky and coffee in his saddlebags, both of which he craved this morning. He carried a small silver flask of whiskey in there, too, which he also wanted, but for a different reason. As soon as he had rekindled the fire in the cave and started the coffee brewing, he tore the sleeve off of his shirt back, washed away the dried blood with water from his canteen, uncapped the flask, and dribbled whiskey into the bullet wound on his arm. The pain caused by the fiery liquor made him grit his teeth, but he kept it up until he was confident that the whiskey had run all through the wound. Then Frank got a spare shirt from his saddlebags, tore a strip of fabric from it, and used that as a bandage, wrapping it around his arm and tying it tightly with the help of his teeth. The simple breakfast of coffee and jerky made him feel almost human again, thought Frank as he stepped back out of the cave. He switched the saddle from Stormy to Goldie and was trying to figure out the best place to start searching for Ben again when Frank saw Wolf staring into the woods as the hair ruffled up on his neck. Frank looked in the same direction, and after a moment, he spotted Ben standing there. With the long, shaggy hair and the crude coat of pelts he wore, Ben blended into the shadows so that it was hard to see him.
Come on out, Ben. We need to talk.
Nancy?
You want me to take you to Nancy?
My sister.
That's right. Nancy is your sister. And she loves you, Ben. She wants to see you. I'll take you to her. Come on. We'll go see Nancy. I'll take you to her.
Ben stepped out into the sunlight. Frank got his first really good look at the man who is now known as the Terror of the Redwoods. It was a fitting name. Ben's appearance was enough to strike terror into anyone's heart. With the long, tangled hair that fell around his shoulders, and the thick, bushy beard that reached to the center of his chest, plus the bulky coat, he looked more like an animal than a human being. He was so hairy that not much of his face was visible, except for the deep-set, burning eyes, and a few patches of pink, sick-looking bare flesh. After a moment, Frank realized that those pink patches were scars. From the looks of them, Ben had suffered some severe burns on his face, sometime in the past. Ben was at least 6.5 feet tall, maybe a little more. It was difficult to judge his weight because the coat concealed the shape of his body, but Frank reckoned he weighed at least 200 pounds, probably more like 230 or 240. With that size and those razor-sharp talons, Ben Chamberlain was one of the deadliest two-legged weapons Frank had ever encountered. He had seen with his own eyes that Ben was incredibly fast and strong, too. Frank put a foot in the stirrup and swung up into the saddle. Ben stepped back hurriedly, an upset look on his face. Clearly, Ben didn't like men on horseback. That might mean something.
It's all right. This is a good horse. He won't hurt you. His name is Goldie.
Goldie?
Huh. That's right. And the other horse is Stormy.
Stormy.
You're getting it. Wolf.
Wolf!
And I'm Frank.
Frank.
Yeah. Close enough. Come on. Walk with me now.
They started through the forest. Ben shuffled along, his long legs easily allowing him to keep up with the horses. As Frank rode, he tried to spot some landmarks and figure out exactly where they were. However, in a vast expanse of timber like this, finding any landmarks was difficult. Even steering by the sun wasn't easy once you were under the trees, because it wasn't very visible. The branches diffused the sunlight so that it might have come from any direction and gave it a greenish tint. Frank was pretty sure they were headed north, though. If they kept going in that direction, sooner or later they would reach the coastline, and he could follow that all the way to Humboldt Bay and Eureka if he had to. That wasn't what he wanted to do, though. If Frank could get Ben to the Chamberlain mansion, he was counting on Nancy's presence to keep him calm enough to deal with.
Beautiful day, isn't it, Ben?
Ben didn't say anything, but he looked around at the trees for a moment, and Frank would have sworn he saw the giant nod and smile a shy little smile. They moved on, Frank talking about nothing in particular, and after a while they came to a rough road, one of the logging roads that Rutherford Chamberlain's men had cut through this wilderness. Ben stopped short and acted like he didn't want to venture out onto the road.
Come on, Ben. It'll be all right. Nothing'll hurt you.
Finally, Ben began to trudge along beside Goldie. They hadn't gone very far, though, when Frank heard the sounds of loggers working somewhere not far off. Ben heard them, too, and reacted violently. He drew back, shaking his head from side to side.
Bad! Bad!
Frank quickly dismounted. He stepped toward Ben, holding out a hand in a calming gesture.
Take it easy, Ben. They won't hurt you. If you leave those men alone, they won't bother you. I won't let them. I swear it.
Ben took several stumbling steps backward and suddenly swayed as if he couldn't keep his balance. He tried to turn, but as he did so, he fell to one knee. Ben tilted his head back and then toppled over. He crashed to the ground on his side and didn't move. Frank circled him warily. Wolf came up and sniffed at him, equally wary.
Looks like he's passed out, Wolf.
Frank risked reaching for the coat. It was held together with crude fasteners made of gut and bone, probably from the small animals that provided Ben with his food. Frank worked at them until he was able to spread the coat open. Under the coat, Ben wore a shirt that might have been a red-checked flannel at one time. It was so dirty that the original color was hard to determine. But it wasn't just dirt that stained the fabric. In several places, large black blotches stood out. Frank knew those were dried bloodstains, and as he touched them, he could tell that they weren't too old. Ben had been wounded recently, and more than once. He might have matching wounds on his back where the bullet had gone through, but Frank would have been willing to bet that the giant was carrying around some lead inside him, too. No wonder Ben wasn't moving as fast now. He was badly injured. He must have been hit during that battle with Bosworth's men the day before. As Frank hunkered there beside him, he knew that he had to get some medical attention for Ben, and soon, if the young man was going to have a chance to pull through. There had to be a logging camp somewhere close by. He could still hear the axes. The loggers would probably have a wagon, and with their help, Frank could load Ben into the vehicle and take him to the Chamberlain mansion. Chamberlain could send someone to town to fetch Dr. Connolly. Frank straightened to his feet. He didn't like it, but he was going to have to leave Ben here. He couldn't just ride off and abandon him in the middle of the logging road, though. He fetched his rope from the saddle and went to work getting it looped around Ben's massive chest under the huge arms. Frank's own injured arm made that difficult, and he was sweating by the time he finished, but he finally managed. Then he tied the other end of the rope to his saddle horn and took up Goldie's reins.
Come on, boy. You can haul that much weight without any problem.
In a few more minutes, Frank had used Goldie to drag Ben off the road and into the thick undergrowth. He pulled some brush and fallen branches around and used them to conceal the unconscious behemoth as much as possible. Most likely, anybody passing by wouldn't notice Ben, at least as long as he remained passed out. Frank coiled his rope and then swung back up into the saddle.
I'll be back as soon as I can, Ben.
Then he set out to find those loggers. At least the rain had stopped, Jack Grimshaw thought, as he led the other 10 men toward the spot where they had last seen Frank Morgan the day before. It wasn't much of a starting place, but it was all they had.
If Morgan don't show up back in Eureka with the Terror by 3 o'clock this afternoon, Chamberlain's bounty is back on. Only it doubles to 20,000. I heard some fellas talking about it.
I know.
If that happens, we'll have 100 men out here poking through the woods, looking for that monster so they can collect. We won't be able to do anything without somebody noticing, Jack.
I reckon in that case, Bosworth will want us to lay low for a while.
What about Morgan? He'll still be hunting for the Terror, too.
Hell, I don't know.
Well, put a burr under your saddle, Jack.
Nobody. Just nothing. Never mind.
Okay.
After a few minutes, an idea came to Grimshaw. He didn't like it, but it made sense, and it might help them find Morgan. Frank was looking for the Terror, after all. And sooner or later, he was bound to come across the place where the whole business started. Grimshaw intended to leave some of the men there to set up an ambush, while the rest of them continued searching for Morgan. Grimshaw turned his horse back toward the east.
Where are we going now? I thought we were headed over to the coast where we had that dust up yesterday.
I changed my mind.
Fine. I need to bite my head off.
Yeah, Terror will do that one of these days.
Like hell. I'll blow that damn monster full of holes.
Bosworth wants him alive for the time being.
Well, once that 20 grand bounty goes into effect, Bosworth ain't gonna have much to say in the matter now, is he?
Grimshaw didn't reply, but he had to admit to himself that Hooley was right. After today, everything would be different, and there wouldn't be anything Bosworth could do to change that. A short time later, they came to the long, narrow clearing next to the bluff, where trees had toppled off to form a crazy jumble of logs at the bottom. Grimshaw was the only one who had been here before.
What's this place? Is that a cabin over there at the base of the bluff?
Yeah. Fella used to live here, but it's empty now.
What are we doing here?
I think maybe the Terror comes here sometimes. If Morgan gets on the thing's trail, then he may show up here too.
They rode up to the cabin and reined to a halt.
Hooley, you and Daryl and Whiteside are gonna stay here. Find some place to hide your horses. Then hole up inside that cabin in case Morgan comes along. If he does, He won't be expecting anybody to be in there. You can ambush him and be done with it. Just be sure you kill him.
I don't know. What's sort of snakey in there to me?
There aren't any snakes. And even if there were, you can shoot them.
What about the rest of you?
We're gonna keep on looking for Morgan.
Well, what if the terror comes along? Do we kill it?
No, blast it, I told you. Bosworth wants the damn thing alive for now, so it can take the blame for things like us wiping out that camp of Chamberlain's yesterday. It's Morgan he wants dead. That's how we're going to proceed until Mr. Emmett Bosworth, his own self, gives us different orders. Now get in there.
All right, all right. I'll check the place out while Whiteside and Daryl hide the horses.
Hooley took his rifle out of the saddle boot and gave his reins to Daryl, then stalked into the cabin, pausing at the door to look around for a second first.
What the hell?
Hooley, what's wrong?
The men outside drew their guns. They didn't have anything to worry about, though, because Hooley reappeared in the doorway a moment later, one arm looped around the neck of a pretty blonde woman about 20 years old. She was well-dressed and looked scared out of her wits.
Look what I found. You didn't tell me this cabin was furnished with its own pretty little gal, Grimshaw.
Son of a bitch. The rest of you men stay here. I'm going to Eureka.
What about Morgan? We were supposed to be looking for him.
The hell with Morgan. This is more important. I'm making you responsible for that girl's safety, Radburn. Keep her here, but see to it that she's not hurt.
I didn't ask to be put in charge of anything, let alone some rich gal.
Well, I'm putting you in charge anyway. You hear that? No harm comes to that girl while I'm gone, understand? If it does, I'll kill the man who's to blame for it. Got that, Hooley?
Why are you singling me out? What did I do?
Just remember what I said. Now let go of her. I want to talk to her before I leave.
With obvious reluctance, Hooley released his grip on Nancy Chamberlain. His hand had been straying dangerously close to her breasts as he held her, Grimshaw noted. He dismounted and motioned Nancy over.
What are you doing out here, gal?
That's none of your business.
Looking for your brother, maybe?
How did you know?
Never mind about that. Where's your buggy?
I didn't bring a buggy. I came out on horseback. My horse is hidden over there in the trees. I wanted to come up to the cabin on foot.
Didn't want to spook him if he was here, huh? I understand.
What do you know about what happened to him?
Like I told you, never mind about that. Anybody know you're here?
I told the men who work for my father. Rockwell and Cobb and the others.
Well, we'll see about that. Go over there and sit down on that log. Don't budge till I get back. Then we'll figure out what to do with you.
Grimshaw mounted up again and rode off toward Eureka. Frank had followed the sound of axes for several minutes until he came to a clearing where several trees had already been felled. Four men were working on another of the giant redwoods. Frank recognized them as the crew he had met a couple of days earlier when he first became aware of the terror. Carl Wilcox was their leader, Frank recalled, and the other three men were named Neville, Peterson, and Trotter. The loggers stopped what they were doing, turning toward the road to see who rode up. Each man wore a revolver, Frank noted, and he saw several rifles and shotguns lying nearby on the big stumps. The air of tension about the men eased slightly as they recognized him.
Mr. Morgan, lots of talk about you in town this morning since you didn't come back last night. Folks were wondering if you'd run into the terror.
As a matter of fact, I did. He's less than half a mile from here.
You found the damn thing?
You killed it?
No, he's hurt, but he's still alive. That's why I need your help.
You keep calling it a he. What's that all about, Morgan?
The terror's not a monster. He's a man. A man who's done some awful things. But he's still human.
But who is he? Who'd do the sort of things that the terror's done?
He's Ben Chamberlain. Rutherford Chamberlain's son.
Hell, that can't be true. Old man Chamberlain's boy ran off to San Francisco a couple of years ago.
I know Chamberlain believes that, but it's not true. Ben has been living out here in the woods since he left home. Something happened to him, though. His mind's not right.
I'll say it ain't right. The terror is a mad dog killer. It's worse than a rabid skunk.
Listen to me. Like I told you, Ben Chamberlain has been hurt. He's been shot and he needs a doctor. I want you boys to bring your wagon and come with me. We'll load him up and take him back to his father's mansion.
Us? Help the terror? After it killed our friends? I'm not sure I believe you to start with about that thing being the Chamberlain boy. But even if you're right, Morgan, he's still a murderer a dozen times over. Why should we help a thing like that?
Yeah, I say we leave him in the woods and let him die. He's got it coming to him.
I told the boy's sister I'd bring him home.
The Colt came out of Frank's holster without him hurrying the draw.
Get in the wagon. You're gonna help me.
You take us right to that monster?
I told you he's in no shape to hurt you or anybody else. When I left him, he was out cold. He's lost a lot of blood, and he may not pull through no matter what we do. But I said I'd bring him home, and by God, I'm gonna do it.
I reckon this gunfighter means business, Carl.
Yeah, I reckon you're right. All right, Morgan, we'll do what you say. But we don't have to like it.
Didn't ask you to like it. Just ask you to give me a hand.
The men gathered up the rifles and shotguns and placed them in the back of the wagon, then climbed onto the vehicle. Wilcox handled the reins of the mule team, while Trotter sat beside him, and Peterson and Neville climbed in the back. Following Frank's orders, Wilcox turned the wagon around and started back along the road toward the spot where Frank had left Ben Chamberlain, hidden in the brush.
So what do you plan on doing with the critter once you get it to Chamberlain's house?
Somebody'll have to hightail it to Eureka and bring back a sawbones. Dr. Connolly, I think. He seems like a good man.
Then what? You gonna turn it over to the law? I'm not sure anybody could build a gallows big enough to hang that bastard.
I don't know. Right now, I'm just trying to see to it that he pulls through.
Why? If you ask me, if he's really Ben Chamberlain, he'd be better off dead, things he's done.
The others nodded in solemn agreement. Frank had no answers for them, only his own stubborn determination to keep his promise to Nancy Chamberlain. A minute later, he recognized the spot where Goldie had dragged Ben off the road.
Hold it right there. Ben's hidden in the brush, just off the road. I'll go check on him first. He's sort of friends with me now, so maybe he won't panic if he sees just me. I'll have to get him used to the idea that you fellas are gonna help us.
I'm still trying to get used to that idea myself.
Frank ignored the comment and made his way into the undergrowth. He pushed the brush aside that he had used for camouflage, expecting to see Ben still lying there on the ground. The problem was, Ben was nowhere to be seen. Ben must have come to, not known where he was, and wandered off. Given his mental condition, Ben might not even be aware that he'd been shot. That didn't really matter, Frank realized. What was important was that the terror of the Redwoods was on the loose again. It took about an hour to reach the settlement. Grimshaw went straight to the Eureka House and up the stairs to Bosworth's suite.
What?
We got to talk.
What the hell is this? You're supposed to be out looking for Morgan.
Forget about that. You got more to worry about than Frank Morgan. While we were looking for him this morning, we came across something else.
Terror?
Nancy Chamberlain.
You mean Chamberlain's daughter? What does she have to do with anything?
She was at that old cabin her brother used. The one where he was staying when we...
I told you before, I don't want to hear about that.
Well, you want to hear about this even less. We didn't know the girl was there when we rode up. She heard us talking about Morgan. And about you.
What the hell do you mean?
I mean, she knows that we're working for you. She knows that you sent us out to kill Frank Morgan. She knows that we're the ones who attacked her pa's logging camp yesterday morning, and that we were following your orders. In other words, she knows the whole damn thing, and she can put your neck in a noose right along with ours.
How could everything go so wrong?
That's why they call it bad luck, I reckon. Question now is, what are we gonna do about it?
There's only one thing we can do about it. Kill the girl. Maybe you could use ropes and horses to pull her body apart. That would look even more like she ran into the terror, and it killed her. Wait a minute. We don't need to kill her just yet.
What?
That would be wasting an opportunity. Fate has dropped Nancy Chamberlain in our laps. We'd be fools not to use her.
I don't get it.
Get the girl. Meet me at that crazy mansion of Chamberlain's in the woods. He's gonna sign his timber lease over to me in exchange for the safe return of his daughter.
Well, that's loco. Maybe he'll sign, sure, but then he'll run to the law as soon as he's got the girl back safe and sound. The papers won't hold up in court, and we'll all wind up stretching rope when the girl gets through telling her story.
She won't tell anyone, because as soon as Chamberlain and I conclude our business arrangement, terror is going to come along and burn down that mansion, with Chamberlain and his daughter and all his hired guns inside. No one will ever be able to prove that Chamberlain didn't just get tired of dealing with the terror and sign over his lease to me so he could get out of the business.
You reckon people will really believe that?
And they won't be able to prove otherwise. That's all that matters.
No, I reckon they won't. Meet you at Chamberlain's with the girl, you say?
That's right. How long will it take you to get there?
Probably about an hour and a half.
Yeah, they don't put it close to the middle of the day. Let's call it noon.
All right.
This would mean committing several more murders. But hell, they were already in so deep, a few more deaths wouldn't make any difference, Grimshaw supposed. There was no point in keeping Wilcox and the other loggers from their work. Since Ben Chamberlain was gone, Frank had no need of the wagon.
What are you going to do now, Morgan?
Try to find Ben. Wolf's pretty good at tracking, and he's been able to find Ben's trail several times so far. He can do it again.
The wagon rolled back up the road toward the clearing where the four men had been working.
Wolf, find Ben. Hunt!
The big cur soon had his nose to the ground, trotting along with Frank following on Goldie and leading Stormy. After a few minutes, Frank began to get an inkling of where they were headed. Ben's old primitive cabin was in this direction. And even though Frank had the impression that Ben had been avoiding the place, maybe being wounded had him even more addled than usual, and he was headed back to some place he knew. That made sense. The farther he followed Wolf, the more convinced Frank was that he was right. They were coming at the place from a different direction, though, and when they got there, Frank found himself on top of the heavily timbered ridge rather than in the clearing down below. Realizing where he was, he reined in well short of the edge and dismounted to go ahead on foot. Frank motioned for Wolf to be quiet and moved silently through the timber himself. Before he reached the edge of the ridge, his instinct told him something was wrong. He bellied down, pushed his rifle in front of him, and crawled forward until he could peer over the sharp drop-off. 10 horses grazed in front of the tumbled-up logs. Frank saw the men they belonged to scattered around, evidently waiting for something. He didn't recognize any of them, but he had a feeling he was looking at Emmett Bosworth's gang of gun wolves, the same men he'd shot it out with the day before, when the terror had intervened in the battle. He saw no sign of Ben Chamberlain now, but an even more shocking sight met his eyes. Ben's sister Nancy was down there, sitting on a log and looking pale and scared. A couple of the hard cases stood next to her, keeping an eye on her, and it was obvious that she was a prisoner. He couldn't make a move against the men right now. Nancy would be in too much danger if bullets started flying around. Frank knew he was going to have to bide his time and find out a little more about what was happening here.
What are you going to do with me?
Well, little lady, I don't really know. I reckon that'll be up to somebody else.
Mr. Bosworth, that's who you mean.
Man with the money gives the orders. That's how it works in this life.
I have money too, you know. My father has a lot of money. He'll pay you to keep me safe.
Sorry, Miss Chamberlain. It ain't my decision to make. Anyway, Jack ought to be back soon, I reckon. And then we'll all find out what's gonna happen.
As long as the men weren't threatening Nancy, Frank could afford to wait. So that was what he did. A half hour went by. The sun began to grow warm as it rose higher in the sky. Here, on the edge of the timber, Frank could actually feel its rays. Movement caught his eye, and he lifted his head to see a man riding out of the trees on the far side of the clearing, heading toward the cabin. Right away, Frank recognized the newcomer as Jack Grimshaw.
Well, what's it gonna be?
The girl said her horse was over in the trees. Somebody go and find it. She'll need a mount. We're taking her back to her father's mansion.
Why the hell are we doing that?
Those are the boss's orders. He's gonna meet us there.
Frank slid back away from the edge of the ridge, as down below the group of gunmen got ready to ride. He had to get to Chamberlain's mansion to stop whatever Bosworth had planned. When he was well out of sight of Grimshaw and the other killers, he stood up and jogged toward the spot where he had left Stormy and Goldie. Wolf was at his side. The big cur stopped suddenly. Frank tensed and looked around. Erickson and his two monster-hunting partners stepped out from behind three of the massive trees and leveled rifles at Frank.
Hold it, Morgan. Make a move and we'll fill you full of lead. Of course, it really doesn't matter, because we're gonna kill you anyway.
Is this about that bounty on the terror?
Damn right. The With you out of the way, it'll be $20,000. That's more money than I've ever seen in my life, Morgan.
He'll never collect a penny of it. Rutherford Chamberlain's not gonna pay off on his own son.
Son? What the hell are you talking about?
The Terror. He's really Ben Chamberlain.
You're crazy. The Terror's some sort of monster.
No, he's not. He's just a young man who had something terrible happen to him. I don't know what it was just yet, but I plan to find out.
You're wasting your breath. I don't believe a word of it. Say your prayers, Morgan.
Ben stepped out from behind the same tree where Erickson had been lying in wait for Frank. He reached out and closed his massive hands around Erickson's head and twisted hard. Frank was already moving, pivoting toward the man on his left. The Winchester cracked, and the second gunman spun off his feet without getting a shot off as the slug drilled cleanly through his chest. The third man managed to fire a couple of frenzied shots before Wolf flashed across the open space and crashed into him, knocking him over backward. The big cur's fangs sank into his throat and ripped it open. Frank quickly checked the man he had shot and found that he was dead. There was no doubt about the other two. Ben sagged against a tree trunk, and Frank hurried over to him.
Frank.
I don't know where you came from, Ben, but I'm glad you got here when you did. Were you hit by either of those shots?
Hit.
Can I look under your coat?
Ben didn't make any move to stop him. Frank pulled the crazy quilt of pelt back and saw fresh crimson welling from a black-rimmed hole in Ben's shirt.
We need to get you some help, Ben. I'm gonna take you home.
No.
Nancy's there. I'm gonna take you to see Nancy. You want that, don't you?
Nancy? See Nancy?
Come with me, then. Can you make it?
Make it.
There was no time now to find Wilcox and the other loggers, Frank thought. He hated to ask Ben to run all the way to the mansion, but he didn't have much choice. As Frank was swinging up into the saddle, though, Wilcox, Peterson, Trotter, and Neville burst out into the open, brandishing guns. They jerked the weapons up when they saw Ben, who spread his arms as if he were about to charge them.
Hold it! Put those guns down! Ben, stop! They won't hurt you!
For a tense second, the loggers didn't lower their weapons. Then Wilcox motioned to the others to do so.
My God! I remember old man Chamberlain's kid. It really is him, isn't it?
Yeah. Do you have that wagon with you?
Back here about 100 yards. We heard the shooting and came to see what it was about.
Lead the way. We have to get to the Chamberlain's mansion as fast as we can, because there's about to be a showdown there between him and Emmett Bosworth, and I reckon Bosworth has a trick or two up his sleeve.
If we help you with this critter, we get to fight Bosworth and his bunch?
I'd say there's a good chance of it.
Come on, boys, let's get that wagon. It's about time Bosworth got what's coming to him.
What about the Terror?
Leave him to me. Ben, listen to me. These men are our friends. They won't hurt you, and you don't need to hurt them.
Cut down trees.
I know, and you don't like that. Right now, it can't be helped. We have to save Nancy. She's in danger.
Nancy? Danger?
That's right. Are you with me, Ben?
With you. Help Nancy.
That's right.
Grimshaw had seen the Chamberlain mansion from a distance before, but it was even more impressive up close. Chamberlain's men must have seen them coming, because half a dozen of them rode out quickly to intercept the riders approaching the mansion. They were tough, hard-looking men, but they wouldn't be any match for his bunch, Grimshaw told himself. For one thing, his men outnumbered Chamberlain's men almost 2-1. Bosworth was already here. Grimshaw recognized the fancy carriage parked in front of the mansion. That meant Chamberlain probably knew already that they had the girl. He turned in the saddle and motioned for Radburn to bring Nancy up alongside him. Chamberlain's men would be a lot less likely to start throwing lead around if Nancy was front and center, where she'd be liable to get in the way of some of it. The two groups of gunmen came to a halt facing each other.
We're here to see your boss, but I reckon you already know that.
Let Miss Chamberlain go, then we'll talk about what you want.
It don't work that way, and you know it. We got our orders, same as you boys do. Move aside now. Let us ride on to the house.
And if we don't?
Then I'll have to shoot you, Cobb.
What the hell? Rockwell, you double-crosser! You're working for Bosworth?
Cobb didn't wait for an answer. He clawed at the revolver on his hip. Rockwell fired and hit Cobb in the chest. He toppled off the horse and crashed to the ground to lie motionless. The rest of Chamberlain's men hadn't moved except to stare in surprise at the one called Rockwell. Grimshaw drew his gun, and so did the rest of his men.
Drop them, boys. It's over.
Chamberlain's men knew they were in a bind. Carefully, they took their guns out and tossed them on the ground.
Now, we're going in.
With half a dozen prisoners now instead of just one, the hired killers moved on toward the mansion, reining in when they reached it.
The rest of you boys stay out here and keep an eye on Chamberlain's men. Miss Chamberlain, you come with me. You're about to see your father again, I reckon.
Grimshaw wrapped his left hand around Nancy's right arm and led her up the steps to the porch. A pale-faced butler must have been watching from inside.
Miss Nancy, are you all right?
I'm fine, Dennis.
Your father and Mr. Bosworth are waiting in the library.
Take us there.
The butler escorted them along the hall to the double doors that opened into the library. When they went inside, they stepped into an atmosphere of tension and hatred. Rutherford Chamberlain and Emmett Bosworth stood there, staring at each other, evidently at a standoff.
Nancy!
Chamberlain started to rush toward her, but Bosworth stepped over so that he blocked the older man's path.
Not yet, Chamberlain. You can see for yourself that your daughter's all right, but you know the deal. You don't get her back until you sign that timber lease over to me.
You really think such a document will stand up in court with a signature coerced on it that way?
You let me worry about that. You just sign that contract I brought with me.
You'll never get away with this. Nancy, what were you doing out there wandering around alone in the woods anyway?
I was looking for Ben. You never would believe me, and I didn't know if Mr. Morgan would ever find him, so I thought I'd take another look around before you put out another of those damned bounties.
Are you still clinging to that insane notion about the Terror being your brother?
Actually, he is. The Terror is your son, Chamberlain.
How do you know? You're nothing but one of Bosworth's cheap gunmen.
Not so cheap. I rode up to that cabin one day, not long after I'd come to these parts to work for Mr. Bosworth. Had another fellow with me named Macklin.
There's no need to go into all this.
I reckon there is. I know you pay my wages, Mr. Bosworth, but I think these two deserve to know the truth after all this time.
Tell me. I was afraid the Terror was Ben, but I could never be sure.
He's your brother, all right, miss. Macklin and I found him there at that cabin where he'd been staying. We were out scouting around, looking for some way to cause trouble for your paw. When we met your brother and realized who he was, Macklin got the idea we ought to scare him a little. He thought that might convince your pa to sell out to our boss here. But it didn't work out that way. Things got out of hand. Macklin used to do a little rustling, so he had a running iron in his saddlebags. He heated it up and used it to singe some of your brother's beard off and burn his face. Before that, your brother wouldn't fight no matter what we did to prod him. Even after Macklin burned him, he just wanted us to leave him alone. But then, Macklin got into a trunk your brother had in the cabin and started tearing up the books he found there. And that set your brother off good and proper. He went wild. He jumped Macklin and, well, started tearing him apart. I took a shot at him and hit him in the head. I thought I'd killed him. I was so shook up I lit out of there and didn't even try to take Macklin's body with me. I didn't tell anybody what had happened, except Mr. Bosworth. And he said we ought to just lie low for a while, see if anybody found out about it. I went back a week later. Macklin's body was still there, what was left of it. But Ben Chamberlain was gone. I hadn't killed him after all.
My God, man! A head wound like that can do things to a man's brain.
I reckon it did, sure enough. 'Cause after that, there wasn't any Ben Chamberlain anymore. There was just the Terror. I gathered up all of Macklin I could find and took the remains and buried him.
Hadn't been back to the place until today.
All right. You told your little story and gotten it off your chest. Now stay out of it while Chamberlain and I finish our deal. Sign that document I brought with me, Chamberlain, and we'll get out of here and leave you and your daughter alone.
Don't listen to him. We know too much. He'll never let us live now.
I'm well aware of that, my dear. I don't intend to let this man win. Go to hell, Emmett. I won't sign your paper, now or ever.
Well, that's a damn shame. I guess I'll just have to forge your signature and take my chances in court after you and your daughter have met with an unfortunate accident.
Outside, with no warning, guns blasted. Grimshaw turned instinctively toward the window. That was when Nancy twisted in his grasp and lunged at him, clawing his face with both hands, trying to get her fingernails in his eyes.
Damn you!
Grimshaw swatted her away. His gun came swiftly and smoothly from its holster, swung toward Nancy. Grimshaw was already pulling the trigger as he turned, but Morgan's shots hammered against his body, driving him back onto the floor.
Frank, I wish we could have gone out fighting side by side.
By the time Frank, Ben, and the loggers had reached the mansion, their group was even larger because they had run into another half dozen of Chamberlain's men along the way. It was a pretty formidable, well-armed bunch, in fact, even if the loggers weren't professional fighting men. They were plenty tough anyway, and when they found out what Bosworth was up to, they were more than willing to put aside their distrust of Ben, who was on his last legs from the bullet wounds he had suffered over the past couple of days. With Frank leading them like a general, the loggers had spread out, slipped up on the mansion, and launched their attack when Frank gave the signal. As the guns began to roar in front of the mansion, Frank and Ben headed for the back. They had just gotten inside when Ben groaned and collapsed. Frank managed to prop him up so that he was sitting with his back against a wall. Frank figured Bosworth would be in the library with Chamberlain and Nancy and maybe Jack Grimshaw. Sure enough, that was the way it had played out. Frank had fired to protect both himself and Nancy, and now Grimshaw was down, lying motionless in death on the floor.
Bastards!
Bosworth was still alive, though, the pistol in his hand spouting fire as he swept it across the room. One of the flying slugs winged Chamberlain, but he managed to grab Nancy and drag her to the floor, out of the line of fire. Frank snapped a shot at Bosworth, but the Timber Baron was already moving. He flung himself through the window behind the desk and toppled out of sight. Frank was about to go after him when a bullet whipped past his ear. Still in the doorway of the library, he twisted to look down the corridor and saw a couple of Grimshaw's men charging toward him, guns blazing. Before he could return their fire, Ben loomed up behind them. He grabbed them and jerked them back. The men twisted around in his grip so that they were able to shove their guns against his body. They fired again and again, the close-range impacts forcing Ben to stumble backward as more slugs ripped through his insides. He found the strength to slam the heads of the two gunmen together, though, again and again, until those heads were so broken and misshapen they didn't look human. Then he let go of them, dropping them to the floor.
Ben!
Nancy rushed past Frank as Ben fell to his knees. She reached him and threw her arms around him. Frank watched as Ben lifted one huge, trembling hand and gently patted his sister on the back.
Oh, no.
Nancy. Home.
Oh, no.
Nancy. My boy. My boy.
Nancy still stood there, somehow finding the strength in her slender body to hold Ben's massive form upright. Chamberlain joined her and wrapped his feeble arms around both of them. With a grimace, Frank turned away from the family tragedy. He still had to deal with the man who had set all this in motion. When he got outside, the shooting was over. He saw Carl Wilcox limping toward him, blood running down the logger's leg from a deep crease on his thigh.
We got all of Bosworth's men except for a couple who ran inside, Morgan. The boss's bodyguards got loose, got their hands on their guns and helped us. That turned the tide. What happened to those other two?
They're dead. What about Bosworth?
You see his carriage here? Bastard managed to get to it and drove off hell-bent for leather. We threw some lead after him, but didn't stop him.
Which way was he headed?
Toward Eureka, I'd say. What happened to the Terror?
Ben Chamberlain is inside. I know he did a lot of bad things, but he died a man, Wilcox. Not a monster. You remember that. Everybody damn well better remember that.
Well, sure, Morgan.
Frank swung up into the saddle and urged Goldie into a gallop, hitting the trail that led to Eureka. Bosworth had $10,000 in a steamer trunk in his suite at the Eureka House, and if he could get his hands on that money and then get out of town before word reached the settlement of the massacre at the Chamberlain Mansion, no one would stop him. He'd have to hide out for a while, and he might have to change his name, but sooner or later he would rebuild his fortune. When he jerked the door to his hotel room open and stepped inside, he stopped short at the sight of a man standing beside the window.
Who the hell?
We haven't been properly introduced, Mr. Bosworth. I'm Dr. Patrick Connolly. It's my wife, Molly, you've been bedding for the past couple of months.
And with that, Connolly lunged at Bosworth, the light from the window glinting on the scalpel in his hand as he swung it at Bosworth's throat. Bosworth's reflexes barely saved him, jerking him back so that the tip of the razor-sharp scalpel just nicked his throat. Connolly stumbled forward, thrown off balance by the missed stroke, and Bosworth slipped his gun from his pocket and jabbed the barrel deep in the doctor's belly and pulled the trigger. Connolly's eyes widened in shock and pain. Bosworth shoved him backward. Connolly collapsed on the divan and looked down at the blood welling between his fingers as he pressed his hands to his belly.
Where's your wife?
Why? You can't take her with you. I fixed her before I came down here. She said she felt poorly, so I fixed her a tonic. She didn't know. I knew about the two of you. Never suspected I would do something about it. So you can't have her.
I don't want her. You damn fool. She complained all the time, and she was barely adequate in bed. I would have left her behind without a second thought. You could have had her for the rest of your life.
Connolly opened his mouth and tried to say something, but no words came out, only a thin trickle of blood. Bosworth gave a contemptuous shake of his head and turned away. He got the money from the trunk, reloaded his pistol, and then walked out, carefully closing the door behind him so that no one would walk by and see Connolly's body in there on the divan. He went downstairs and started across the lobby.
Did you talk to Dr. Connolly, Mr. Bosworth?
I talked to him.
He pushed through the doors, stepped out onto the porch. Frank Morgan was waiting for him in the street.
All right. Fetch the law. I can afford the best attorneys in the country. I'll fight tooth and nail in the courts, Morgan. You know that. I can make this last for years. But the one thing I won't do is draw my gun on you. We both know you'd kill me.
We both know you deserve it.
Well, people don't always get what they deserve, do they?
Those words were barely out of Bosworth's mouth when Connolly appeared behind him. Reached around him with one arm, looped it under the timber baron's chin, jerked his head back, and plunged the scalpel into his throat, ripping from one side of Bosworth's throat to the other. Then Connolly released Bosworth, letting him fall to the porch.
He killed my wife! Killed me!
Connolly collapsed as well, falling across Bosworth's corpse. Frank was relieved to know that it was finally all over, and that for once, he hadn't fired the final shot in this bloody, tragic ruckus. It would be all right with him if he never had to do that again. But he knew better than to hope for that. It took a big coffin for Ben Chamberlain, and a bigger grave than usual. But the undertaker managed, and a couple of days later, Ben was laid to rest. There had been a lot of funerals in Eureka the past 2 days. All too often, that was what happened when he rode into a town, Frank reflected, as he stood beside the long mound of dirt that marked the final resting place of the man who had been known for a time as the Terror. Everyone was gone except Frank, Nancy Chamberlain, and her father, whose left arm was in a black silk sling, Wolf, Stormy, and Goldie waited patiently just outside the stone fence that ran around the graveyard. Nancy had told Frank what Grimshaw said about the events in the primitive cabin that had resulted in her brother becoming the Terror. When he heard the story, Frank was a little less regretful about having to kill his old friend. Jack Grimshaw had stepped way over the line more than once. Frank had also found out from some of Chamberlain's men about the gunman called Rockwell, who had actually been working for Emmett Bosworth. Frank knew he couldn't prove it, but he was convinced that Rockwell was the man who had shot at him when he first discovered the cabin, probably acting on his own initiative because he knew Bosworth wouldn't want Frank poking around. Frank was satisfied that was the answer. There were no answers where Dr. Patrick Connolly and his wife were concerned. Nobody in Eureka seemed to know why Bosworth and Connolly had killed each other, and Molly Connolly's death was a complete mystery. Everything in life had an explanation, Frank supposed, but that didn't mean folks could expect to know about all of it. Nancy turned to him now and laid a black-gloved hand on his arm.
Thank you for everything you did, Mr. Morgan.
I didn't save your brother.
But you tried to. That was more than anyone else did.
Not really. You tried to. Sometimes, though, you just can't save someone, no matter how much you love them. There are things bigger than us, Nancy. Things we can't fight or even explain. They just are.
I suppose you're right. Where will you go now, Mr. Morgan?
Well, you're welcome to stay with us for a while, if you'd like.
I'm heading back down to San Francisco. A telegram one of my lawyers sent me just caught up with me this morning. It seems that, there's been some trouble in my family, too. A tragedy concerning my son and his wife.
I'm so sorry. Sometimes I wish I was a man. A man like you, Mr. Morgan. So I could just shoot all my troubles.
And sometimes sometimes I wish it really worked that way, ma'am.
As Frank rode away, a wind blew in from the sea, over the bay, and stirred the branches of the towering trees that grew to the edge of the graveyard, so that they moved back and forth, almost like the arms of giants, waving farewell.
The Last Gunfighter Sudden Fury is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2009, William W. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2011, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Ken Jackson, James Konacek, Christopher Graybill, James Lewis, Yasmin Toison, Thomas Penny, Scott McCormick, Thomas Keegan, Christopher Sheeran, Michael Glenn, Paul Fidalgo, Mort Shelby, Johann Detweiler, Stephen Carpenter, Daniel Gavigan, Tim Carlin, Joseph Thornhill, Eric Messner, Richard Rowan, Andy Clements, Terrence Aselford, and Ren Casey. Directed by Ken Jackson. Book adapted for graphic audio by Doug Krenzlin. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Lauren Driller. Original music and title theme by Johann Detweiler. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed The Last Gunfighter, be sure to look for the series A Town Called Fury, as well as Smoke Jensen, The Mountain Man, The First Mountain Man, and Sidewinders. Available at road stops everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. Keep listening for previews of other graphic audio thrillers.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.